Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 31 with Jeanette and Cameron Nijhoff of the famous Team Nijhoff stud farm in the Netherlands. In this episode, we discuss their recent success at the Dutch Masters, their relationship with Team NL, family roles within the business, the Team Nijhoff stallion selection process, partnerships, mentality, and what breeders can expect at the Team Nijhoff Stallion Show this Saturday, the 30th of March. I first wanted to start with congratulating you and acknowledging your success on an incredible Satogenbos. To see online that you were awarded the Horseman or Horsewoman of the Year, the Horse Person of the Year, was already a great acknowledgement for you guys, for your family, for your business. But then to top it all off with Willem's win on Highway was exceptional. And it's one thing to win it, but the way that he won it was even more exceptional. So just when you think you got this incredible award and recognition of your achievements, to then get a win as significant as that was something quite special. Talk me through your emotions that weekend. Like, how was the experience for you guys?
Well, it started off that my father was in the board of Den Bosch choosing the sportsman of the year, and the people in the board could never nominate themselves. So it was last year that he said, I'm going to resign from this board because I'm almost 80 years old and it's time for someone younger to step in. So this is probably also why they could nominate him this year. And that was the reason why they contacted me and they said, oh, we want to make your father Sportsman of the Year in Den Bosch. It's a surprise, but it would be very nice for the whole family, children and grandchildren to be there to celebrate his...
this award.
Yeah, this award, this ceremony. And so when we were there, the surprise was that the whole family was awarded. So we didn't know that. We thought we were going to celebrate my father's nomination, and then it was for all of us. So that was the first great surprise of that weekend.
That makes a lot more sense, because I was thinking it was special that so many of you were actually there to get it. That was really nice. But that's good that you had a little bit of notice. For me, just from a personal point of view, what was really nice in seeing you get it, it's actually not just for your achievements as owners of stallions or owners in the sport, but something that I have seen over the years is how generous you've been with your time to people in the industry. And I don't know if you remember this, but when... I think it was 2009, the summer of 2009, I just finished my first year of college, and I was just on a holiday in Holland. I had no intention to do anything horsey. And my father messaged me and he said, you can't be in Holland without visiting Team Nijhoff. And I thought, like, I'm on a holiday with friends that have nothing to do with horses. And do you remember this?
Yes, I remember. This is when you bought the Calvados, Mayor, right?
This is quite a few years before. I had only just started to get involved in horses, and I remember he emailed you. I had almost nothing to do with breeding. All I had was an interest. And he emailed you and he said that his son wanted to visit. I think he had wanted to go to your stallion show. It was something that he had been thinking about. So he contacted you. You told us which train to get from Amsterdam. You picked us up at the train station, you brought us around, you got us a tour of the farm. You were really generous with your time. And like at the time, I was not even really a potential customer. Like I was so much at the beginning. And that's quite a long time ago, what, 15 years later. But it still stuck in my mind so much of how it wasn't that I was some big business person or some large breeder coming in, but I was really impressed with the time and the effort you went to show me around. And I've been back, yeah, to buy the Calvados mare. I've been back with Irish breeders. I was able to come back after that and actually bring my father to your stallion show. And I've been very impressed every time about how, no matter who somebody is when they come to your place,
how you give them so much time and you're so generous with your information as well. So for me, actually seeing that award, it was extra nice to see you've been acknowledged as a family.
Well, it's always nice to motivate young people. That's why we also in our business and in our Stallions, we like young people and young stuff. So it's always like how when you are young yourself, you realize how important these things are and you remember for the rest of your life. So it's always nice to be kind, and it's nice when you want to see something and do something, people help you. And we have been helped by people, so it's also nice to help other people.
It's already been a big year, even though we're only in March. It has been a big year because aside from winning the Rolex Grand Prix, in January it was announced that Highway was also awarded Horse of the Year for 2023. And I think we talked a little bit about this maybe in Lear, Jeanette, but as a family and as a business, you're developing quite the relationship with the Horse of the Year award. Will you talk me through how many times you've won it and which stallions have won it so far?
I think in total, 7 stallions won it. One of the first ones was Olympic Cocktail. Then it was not NOP, but then the horses got the prefix Olympic. So we had Olympic Cocktail and Olympic Concord. And then we had Ferdy, Johnson,
Heartbreaker,
Grandorado, Highway.
Then we have 7, I think.
And that's 7, I think. Yeah.
Hey, it's incredible. There's a lot of people, if they won an award like that once in their life, it would be an incredible achievement. So it's something quite special. The other thing as well that has been equally as impressive, well, actually, more impressive from a sport perspective, is the relationship that you're developing in another area with Team NL. The amount of championships that in the past few seasons where there has been a Nyhoff horse on, it's really, really impressive. And then for the Dutch Federation to come out in, I think in January as well, with their long list for the Olympics. And again, as an owner or as a breeder, you think, to have one horse in your life and to in one moment have 3 horses on the long list with Highway Hernandez and Grandorado, I think that's a really special achievement. To you guys, what does it mean to be part of Team NL?
Yeah, it's a really strange feeling, actually. But it's like when we were at the European Championships last year in Milan. Then it's just all the Dutch people are together all in orange. We do everything together. We live together. You cheer together. And it's a bit the same maybe as we have it with Max Verstappen or something. With the Dutchies, it's really a bond together or something. And yeah, that gives such a motivation to keep going and to stay there at the top and with the team together. And yeah, that just really motivates us to keep it going, actually.
I know the three stallions are now part of the Dutch Olympic Foundation, hence the NOP on their names. But in general, with your horses at, say, at the top level of the sport, do you ever feel any pressure, commercial pressure, to sell? Because there's been a long list of top Grand Prix horses over the past few seasons, and I'm sure there's a lot of international interest. But even before the NOP gets involved, how do you handle the pressure to sell? Because you're dealing with horses that are worth a lot of money in terms of the sport.
It's always a different situation. It's stallion per stallion. For us, it depends also on how popular the stallion is as a stallion. Can he make some money in breeding? Do you have more owners? What is the progeny like? So you make a decision and say, okay, this horse is a super sport horse. We have to sell him now because his offspring are okay, but not special. Or like with Highway Grandorado, they are very good jumpers. We can keep him because even if they get an injury tomorrow, they will be worth money as a breeding stallion, and they have value as a breeding stallion because they are very good sires. Sometimes a horse is a fantastic sport horse, but not a producer of sport horses. And I'm going to make an example. We had Q Breitling, yeah, was laser champion with BC Madden, was a super sport horse, but not a super sire yet. So it's one of the reasons maybe that you at that point decide to sell a stallion, because he is more of a sport horse than as a horse producer or as a sire. So that is sometimes an idea. It depends on the offer. Of course, now you get offered a lot of money, and sometimes you just have to close your eyes and not think about how much it is and just be proud to have this stallion. And I think we've also become quite big by not selling. We never sold Voltaire. We never sold Concord. We never sold Heartbreaker. We never sold Clinton. We never sold, Lord Z, or all those stallions that stayed that were foundation sires. Is also what makes your name, makes you proud, brings us business. We have no other business, so I cannot pour money out of my real estate company or any other company. So for us, it's important to have good young stallions that breed well, that produce well, that perform well. So the breeders keep coming, the riders keep coming, you have horses to sell. So it comes all together. So it's not just selling the stallion. It's also something that is very valuable as a stud, as a sire, as a sport horse, as a producer of sport horses. So, that's very important. Yeah, a topic in the decision if we keep it or sell it.
Yeah, and it's another nice thing about your business. I know everyone's circumstances are different, and you have to make the circumstances that are right for your business or your family in a moment, but it is nice that horses don't come into your stallion catalog, vanish the next season, the next new hot thing, vanish in two seasons. And it gives breeders a chance, because maybe a breeder supports a young one, maybe that offspring goes and does well, and they want to come back and use it after a few years once they know that that cross worked or that did well. And in the majority of cases, that horse is still available to them. And it's a lot easier to follow the progression, and you're seeing it in the same ownership, usually with the same rider. Maybe you can follow the whole evolution in quite a nice way with you guys. For those people maybe less familiar with Team Nyhoff, even though you've become quite a globally recognized brand and family and business, but for those less familiar, will you talk through the different family members' involvement in the business on a day-to-day basis and what roles each of you play at the moment?
Yeah, let's start with, Jeanette's father, my grandfather. He's actually driving around, visiting the breeders, watching foals now, driving on the tractor also sometimes. Yeah, still a farmer. and he's really like a scout. He's watching everywhere. He drives through France, Belgium, Germany, at places where we didn't knew it exists, but he's coming there and he's looking for horses. And then Jeanette is here actually managing all the breedings and making all the paperwork ready.
Laboratory, semen collections, the shipments, all the logistics involved with semen shipments, breeding certificates, invoicing, how to get the semen the fastest to the breeder and make sure it arrives, because that's very important. It's very annoying if you make a shipment to Ireland and it doesn't get there in time. Or like we tell the couriers, if we send a pen or a pair of scissors and it's not there tomorrow, it's a shame if you need it, but you can use it the day after tomorrow. When your mare is ready, you want semen, so it should be there. So that is always my job, to find out how to get it there and in the fastest way possible.
And with me and my dad, actually, we do a lot of work together. Or all the work we do outside, we do together. And it's all to do with the young horses. We have like 400 yearlings, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, to work with them to manage all the breeding mares we have, and also from other breeders who brings them here, to inseminate them, to make them pregnant. And then we try to do our own sport stable as good as possible. We do it a bit together. We discuss a lot together. And in the meanwhile, we are All the time on the way, actually, to hopefully to find a new superstar somewhere. And that's how our day is looking, actually.
Did I hear you correctly that you said you have approximately 400 young horses?
Yeah,
maybe more.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite something. Each year, approximately how many foals do you breed yourself and how many would you buy in a typical year?
We did always like 20, 25 ourselves. And like for 3, 4 years ago, we built a new place close to us here where we have our own breeding mares. And we like to expand it to like, yeah, let's say maximum 50 foals a year, our own. And then we buy like, yeah, we say always like we try to buy 60 or 70. But in the end, there will be 90 or 100 or maybe even a bit more. Okay. We buy them, we see them, our breeders come here and they don't know how to sell their foals. So then we say, yeah, now we are also there for you. We do it together or something like this. So in total, like, yeah, how many we have last year? 160, I think.
Yeah, since the COVID, it's very important to help the breeders also sell their foals because they get stuck at home with the foal, especially in the COVID times, there were no buyers. So we did these auctions where there were no restrictions, only a healthy foal. So people could enter their foals and we sold them in a public auction, which helped the breeders a lot to get rid of their foals, because that is a very important thing as well, that a lot of breeders want to breed, but they also have to find buyers. And this started a little bit in this COVID times, 2020, 21. And that is actually a very good idea. To make the connection between the breeder and the buyer to help them market and get rid and sell their foals.
With the foals that you buy, is it all colts that you buy or is it both? Is it colts and fillies or stallions and fillies?
I think first, my grandfather likes more to buy a colt. It's like, yeah, in the past it was always you need to buy a colt. Maybe it can become a breeding stallion. And now it's more like when we have a really nice foal somewhere with a good mother line, we think who can be a really good spot horse or really, yeah, just a nice foal, then we buy it. It's not really necessary to buy a colt or a filly, but
I think
okay.
It's 60-40.
Yeah,
like 60%
a bit more colts will be there.
And 40% are fillies.
Okay, and then from the time that the foals are weaned until, say, the time that the approvals come around for them, as they're coming three, what does your selection process look like for the colts? Like, at what stages are you making an assessment and what are the main things that you're assessing them on at those points?
Yeah, we start like last December, then we start with the almost 2 year olds who are now just become 2 year old. Then we let them jump 3-4 times in, yeah, let's say 4 months now, yeah, in this time actually, before they go into the fields. But we're not making a really hard selection. We describe how they are a bit, we know it also, but it's not that we make a selection of from 10 or 20 horses we took separate, take separate and keep them inside or something. They go all in the field. We don't make x-rays before. And then after, when they go in, then we make a selection. And then when we really think we have one or two who can be really interesting, we discuss what we do, but we actually prefer to take them, to leave them a bit longer in the field or in the group and start 1 year later with the stallion process, actually.
Okay, because I think maybe we discussed this a little bit in Lear, Jeanette, but that you've maybe slightly moved away from doing the three-year-old approvals because it was quite a lot that you're kind of, you'd rather take them out at four, is it?
No, because they have to be prepared really well. They have to jump really well. There's a lot of professional people presenting stallions. It's hard to tell the difference. And like I said before, for us, it's very important that the stallion is very good. So if you keep it a little bit longer and break it and start to ride it under the saddle, you have a very good idea yourself about what you put in the market. So it's not that you put a nice, black, beautiful stallion with good bloodlines that, tends to be useless, to say it very hard, but you want to put something in the market that is really good, that can, you know what you said before, that they stay forever. It can be in the catalog for 20 years. That is the idea. And you can only test that under the saddle. There is no world championships for free jumping anymore. All the competitions are under the saddle. So we would like to test them under the saddle to see how good they are. And if that is what we think it is, then they can be put up for a performance test. And that depends then of if the horse is really tall or big and it needs a little bit more time, or if it can do it easily, we choose a KWPN or a German or a Belgian stallion test for them to be approved.
Yeah, because the process of putting a stallion through an approval is so expensive. And when a lot of these assessments are being done at three-year-olds, you would imagine that there's a lot of waste because you're spending a lot of money, you're approving them before they've had a saddle on them, and then your chances of getting it wrong as an inspection panel are much higher. But I guess if you're doing it at four, like you say, you've a lot more information. You've probably made extra selections yourself in that year that you decide we're not going forward. So your strike rate of horses presented and horses approved and horses that turn out to be good ones should now be even higher.
Yeah, we kind of select ourselves which stallions we want to present. It's not that we present 20 or 25 and the judges can decide which ones you like. That we really would like to decide ourselves which ones we put up for approval. Like you say, the costs are very high because at the moment, if you put a stallion somewhere to prepare for the stallion show, it's almost $1,000 a month. You have to put it for 4 or 5 months. Once it gets approved, it costs you money, $2,500 for the performance test, $2,500 to inscribe as a stallion. So before you know, you have 10,000-15,000 euros of costs. And if they breed nothing afterwards, then it's quite a bit and a waste of money. Yeah. Or if it passes the test with very average scores, it doesn't get any covering, so you don't make any money at all. So it's very important for us to send something to the performance test that is worthwhile in two cases, for ourselves and for the breeders.
Yeah, and I think at this point in time, your family has proven that you know a good one. And also, I think some of even your most famous ones of the past almost didn't make it. Like if you had brought them out as a three-year-old and then you decided based on what happened as a three-year-old or what the feedback was, they were gone. With Voltaire, or with Heartbreaker, it would have been so easy for there to be a very different story, whereas there's less chance of maybe missing those good ones now with the way that you're doing things.
Yeah, and what it's important that you know yourself really good what you have at home, what kind of horse you have. And you have a horse here at home and we let him jump a few times and we put him on the launch and we train with the horse. It's really necessary to know what you have, how the horse is, how they react, how they do with everything. And then when you think about it and you have the right people who work with horses and who know really something about a horse, then you get to know really a lot of a horse actually already, as a young horse also.
And the other thing that I'm just thinking of is often cases with some of the stallions, the young stallions that you're presenting, you have already had, even if you didn't breed them yourself all the time, that you have probably already had their father and maybe their grandfather and maybe the dam sire and like a lot of, even if it's a young colt coming through, and whether you bred it or bought it, a lot of the time it's still your own blood, so that you probably know a little bit what to expect. And maybe some are going to mature a little bit later. Some need a bit more time or a bit of a different system.
Yeah, like now we have Lamas, the 8-year-old, who jumped great in the Sunshine Tour. And okay, at that time was Grandrado really popular. We had Highway Eldorado himself. We bred him ourselves. So then we said as a 3-year-old, we really liked the horse. But at this moment, we have no chance to get some real numbers for breeding mares with him. So then we rent him to the Czech Republic for 3 years just to get a nice development. And then we took him back when he was 6 years old. And then we came back. He was flying around here. And then we made our plan. And now he's quite popular. and then you can see what's the best for the horse. When the horse was there as a 3 or 4 year old and he was still a bit weak and really tall, but okay, nice jumper, but a bit up and down sometimes. Then everybody's saying already, oh, I don't like the horse. The horse like this, like this. And now the horse had the time to develop, to become stronger, to become who he really is. And now people are saying, oh, what a horse, what an unbelievable horse. We like to breed with the horse. So you also need to know when the horse, you need to know to decide which is the right moment to put a horse actually in the stallion brochure.
But it doesn't always have to be our own bloodlines, because we always like to find something new. Yeah. You don't want too much inbreeding, because if you have the sire and the dam sire and the great dam sire, sometimes it's also nice to have something new. So mm-hmm. we always look for something new and better to make a good combination. To have a different offer. Okay, if you like the stallion, like we had Clinton, like we had El Dorado, like we had Grand Dorado, like we have Lamas, you have 4 offspring in the lineage already, but it doesn't always have to be like that. It's also nice to find something completely new, like we found a very special diamond, the Sam Tsimeisan drummer last mm-hmm. year. You know, you're really happy to find a bloodline that is not there already.
The other thing that has been present in maybe in your business or in your business model, that even right back at the early days when Henk Sr. had some of his first stallions right up to today. So if we go back to Voltaire in partnership with Jan Greva and then right to today with like Newmarket with the Hendricks family, throughout the years, you seem to be very open to doing partnerships with other stallion owners, which is quite interesting that it's maybe not looked at as much as it's more collaboration than competition. And I think that's quite interesting. But from your perspective, what do you see as the benefits of those partnerships with other stallion owners?
Sometimes when you find a nice stallion, it's not for sale or only a part. So it's nice to be partners and both have a share. It's a little bit like the syndicate with the thoroughbreds that you get more breedings from to have a special partnership with good people helps you a lot to get access to bloodlines, to new stallions. So you both have your clients, so it brings a little bit more business, so it's more stronger together, I would say, or better together, if you want to say that.
As an outsider, it gives the feeling that you're open, like it's more inviting as well, probably, for other people to come forward and maybe propose doing something, because it's very easy in the horse industry. Sometimes people have a very closed mind and it's like they want to own everything and they don't want to share their clients or share their business. Whereas seeing the opposite with your stallions, I think, is really positive to see. But then the other thing that I was thinking, even with the likes of Newmarket, it's like now what it tells me is, it's not just that the Nyhoff family believe in him, or it's not just that the Hendricks family believe in him. It's actually that two people that have been in the business, two families and businesses, believe enough in this horse to partner. I think that gives us a very positive signal as well, just as a breeder looking from the outside in.
Yeah, it's better to work together than against each other. So that helps a lot. And also for the breeders, if you can give them the right information, the good information about the stallions, what their good points are, what their weak points are, I think it's more important to give them the right information so they know the stallion is breeding very tall or very small or very big or very tall or very thin or... You know, the breeders have a lot more use if you give them the correct information than just write a catalog with all hallelujah and it's all better best. It doesn't help. It's nice, but it's one black horse in the catalog and another one next year, as we like our stallions to stay, preferably for 20 years.
Yeah, and that's another thing that has stood out to me over the years and in some of our conversations on stallions, is when I've discussed different stallions with you over the years, Jeanette, I don't ever feel that I have been just told what you think I want to hear as a breeder, whereas that has been my experience with some other stud farms. And it's really unhelpful because then you just stop asking for information on the stallions from the ones that you know are just telling you what you want to hear. And where I've been impressed is sometimes, even if that information that you're giving me is meaning that I won't use that stallion on the mare that I was thinking of, it means that I trust your information more the next time you tell me that this one does suit or this one does have all these good things. I'm going to believe that more. And that's something that I've seen over the years that I've really appreciated.
But I think the good information benefits us both, the breeders and the stallion owners. If you have a nice foal that you can sell, you are happy. If this nice foal goes to a nice rider,
it becomes a good jumper.
Becomes a good jumper or an international jumper, and you are the breeder and we are the stallion owner. We're all in it together. And then it's better if it's a nice one than a bad one.
Yeah. And I think a few years ago on one of the visits, I think you had mentioned that you do a number of partnerships of breeders with other mares. Is the partnerships of breeders something that you're still doing?
A little bit less, because since Cameron is really interested in the breeding, we have a lot more mares. So what in the past, we would give the nice mares to a friendly breeder and breed the foals together. As now we have the breeding farm for the mares ourselves, it's more like they stay at home and we breed our own mares. So we breed a lot more foals at home the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Hey, Cameron's going to be busy.
Yeah. Pretty, but it's good. When you like to
alarm on his phone.
Yeah. maybe some hours later, and the new foal will come. We'll see.
Over the years, is there any particular stallion that sticks in your mind that really exceeded your expectations, that ended up doing even more than you had expected, either in sport or breeding?
I think in sport, it's Highway at the moment. Like, Highway was also always an unbelievable good horse, always was. We bought him really expensive as a three-year-old. Jeanette did, was there. As a four-year-old, he gets the highest points ever at the Dutch Championships for jumping then. He was always a machine of ours. But okay, we never knew what his limit was. Like, is it an amazing 150 horse? Or is it a 155, maybe sometimes a 160 horse? Or is it a Grand Slam winner and a top 10 horse from Europe, actually? So I think that horse makes the expectations getting better actually than we thought, I think, maybe in the end.
I think it's a little bit the same, like if you want to compare it with a stallion from the past, like Heartbreaker, when he was young, he was a little bit smaller, a little bit shorter. He jumped unbelievable, but all the professionals said, oh, does this horse have enough scope? But every time he ate his heart out and jumped higher and bigger and did everything that was asked from him, I think you can compare them a little bit in that way, that you never know what they do and what they are capable of doing until they really do it. And that is also sometimes the scope looks limited, but in the end, if they do it, it's in their mind, it's in their heads. And if they have the willingness to do so, with a good education, as you can see with Highway, the whole year he did 150s and 155s. He got a lot of experience, and now it's 160 and he does it easily. So it's a bit the same as with Heartbreaker, 20 years ago. A little bit same story, that when they are young, you never know if they have enough scope, and in the end, they do.
Yeah, and I guess maybe for a while, the focus from a breeder or a spectator point of view, the focus a lot of the time was probably going to Gran Arado with Willem.
Yeah.
He jumps with a lot more scope. It looks a lot more spectacular if he makes these big jumps.
Yeah.
So it's the scope, natural scope is easier and shows more. But like I said, you never know until they really have to do it that they can do it. So now you can see that Heartbreaker or Highway can easily do it.
In your perspective, what do you see as Highway's greatest qualities? And if you were coming to him with the mare, I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest after the Dutch Masters. What do you think he brings to the table the most, or what's the type of a mare that you would prefer to give him?
In the end, in his mentality is, I think, exceptional. I think we don't have any horse with a better mentality as Highway. And then he's almost over careful, maybe. It's okay, he's unbelievable careful, but you need to manage it. We also need to stay calm, and we talk a lot with Willem, like we do in Den Bosch. Most of the riders did the 155 class at Friday evening, and we said, no, we don't do it. We stay calm. We do only the 145 class. We just let him see the ring there, let him breathe a bit, stay calm, and we have our main goal on Sunday, and there we go on. And like this, that's really important, I think, with a horse like this, to stay calm and make a good plan for it.
Yeah, and I think his willingness to work, what it really is, his fighting mentality is probably what he got from El Dorado. And the type, he doesn't look like El Dorado. El Dorado is much bigger. He's much more refined, a little bit more Shilano maybe in type, if you want to say something. They're a little bit opposite if you put them next to each other. But I think what is in their brain, the willingness to work, to fight, to go for it, that is something that they both have.
Turning it around a little bit, is there a stallion currently in your collection or in your stable that you think is more special than maybe the attention that they're getting or the support that they're getting? Is there a stallion that you feel is actually underrated or not used as much as you really believe he should be?
Ooh, that's a
Not
good
really,
question.
I think. But I think to answer the question is that at the moment we have like four or five really nice upcoming stallions that are now like following up, like Zero Blue, like Dorian Gray, like Poca de Mariposa. These stallions are really getting into a nice flow and yeah, getting a lot of breedings, but also a lot of a potential as a sport horse. So it's always difficult, but I think the breeders are quite knowledgeable. So there is not a really a very good stallion that doesn't get any coverings. And we are also very much promoting ourselves. You know, if we like a stallion, we stand behind it, and
Yes.
we tell the breeders that it's more important to use this stallion than that stallion. Also, sometimes we try to convince the breeders, if they make, in our opinion, not the right choice for the mare, to say, okay, your mare likes this or that, or needs more this or that, you better choose this stallion over that stallion, so you can explain to them why they can still decide themselves, but you can, with good
Guide them.
reason and with good things, you can guide them.
Yeah, and that's great. Cameron, you mentioned about with Highway his mentality, and it's I'm working on an article at the moment for an equestrian newspaper in Ireland, and I've asked successful breeders, one of the questions that I'd ask them is in their experience, what have their really special mares or most successful mares shared in common? And you would think they would go on to describe their, you know, that they were all like this type or this type, but so much it's coming back to actually their mentality, their character, their willingness. So it's very good timing just on Highway, and mentality was something that I wanted to ask with the stallions. So you've answered one part of my question on the who has the best mentality. So I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction and go with the young horses coming through with your young stallions. And you're in a good situation in that you can have a lot of your promising young stallions produced at home. So you're getting a lot of information back. Is there a youngster whose attitude, mentality, willingness to work just stands out that bit more than the other youngsters?
I think in the moment, I must say Drama. He's okay, he's only 4 year old, but like when you work with him and when you do all the stuff with him, he's so motivated to work. When we start to jump, he's really fresh. He likes to go. Cars needs to stay really calm and quiet and just let him do and let him play a bit sometimes. And I think for a big horse like him, it's quite exceptional how much blood and mentality he has already at 4 years old already.
And I think from the older stallions, Poker de Mariposa is also always wants to jump clear. This horse is like a machine. It never wants to make a mistake. It always wants to jump. It's like all those courses are clear. It's really like a, Jos Lansing's always said a horse must want to jump clear. This is one of these horses that wants to jump clear.
In terms of type and the look, is there one of your stallions that really stamps his mark on the offspring the most? Like in terms of you look and you just know like that so many of the foals have look.
I think Grand Dorado has it a lot. Yeah, maybe when you want to be critical, as a foal, they could be a bit nicer at the back. But okay, when they are 3-4 year olds, it's getting a lot better. And they have, I don't know where it comes from, but they have a lot of white. When they're trotting, you can really recognize them. They have a bit their own way of trotting. And just how they look, you can see it a bit in the eyes. I don't know what it is, but you can really recognize them, actually.
That's nice to know, because it's always nice, whether it's a stallion or whether it's a mare, it's always nice to find the ones that are dominant, that they pass on their look or their characteristics really strongly. Throughout the past few years, or even throughout the past few decades, you've enjoyed an incredible amount of success, both in breeding and in sport. But I'd like to know from each of you, if you had to pick two or three of your favorite moments or your proudest moments, what would they be?
I think one moment, of course, was last week. And maybe what makes it even nicer now that like we had for 10 years already, or 12 years, we had the Olympics with Verdi and with Johnson also. And we had a lot of medals already, a lot of, but we had quite a few already. And these moments are really special. But I think maybe what makes it even more special, like now the last year, that we go to Milan, or last week to Den Bosch, we go together as a family. You work all day together with the whole family, actually, in the weekends. We are here, then we don't have so many employees in the weekend or not at the stud here. Then we do it all together. Then maybe the bond that you get together is even more special. And then to celebrate things like this, that's quite unique, I think.
Yeah.
And what was very unique was the London Olympics, when we went in the car with my father and me and my daughter Camilla and Cameron, and we stayed in one hotel room because there was not much place, as Verdi was only selected 3 or 4 weeks before the Olympics. And then we won the silver medal with the team. So you go to the Olympics and you have a medal and you have this celebration in a fantastic London. It makes you feel very, very special and very, very proud. So this also, like you said, you do something when you are young. I think our children were really infected at that time to see such a special venue and see the impact on a lot of people and on their parents and grandparents, how special it is to have to achieve something special like that, like an Olympic medal.
It's a very interesting environment to grow up in as well. The danger is that you can think that success is normal.
Like, that is, because sometimes you don't celebrate enough. It's like, okay, people say congratulations and you keep working again and you forget to celebrate, or you forget to make a party about it, because it's like, okay, next day back to work and let's be normal and we have to keep going again. So it's really also for yourself important to take the time to celebrate and to enjoy it, because like you said, it's, you almost take it for granted. It is very, very special, and you must realize that very well.
Because I think it is probably 12 or 13 years ago since myself and my father were at your stallion show. And I actually remember Cameron being involved and going around, and you were quite a young kid at the time, which I think you were driving around on a quad all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and to grow up in that, even through your childhood, like, you've already experienced so many highs with the family, but I guess it's nice that now that you're involved as an adult, that you're getting to enjoy these moments as well and travel with the family. When I was
also experienced about, because the first pony they took to the approval got disapproved immediately. Yeah. And that was a great disappointment. I never saw two children almost close to tears and crying because they thought the stallion was going to be approved and it didn't. So it's good to learn both ways. It's good to have the disappointment and then to know the success.
Definitely, because to know that it doesn't come easy. Because there's a lot, there's so much goes in behind the scenes. You know, we can only see the success. But throughout the years, even in the years that I've known you, you've also had like lots of difficult moments. There's been a lot of really promising stallions where maybe they've died, or even some stallions that had retired to breed and they died way ahead of their time. And like Spartacus and Latour, and there was a bunch of horses that were gone far too soon, and it's very quick that we can forget that, whereas you've definitely had the ups and the downs, but it's nice that you've had so many big moments. When I met Jeanette in Lear at the BWP approvals, she had mentioned that you had made a decision, Cameron, to go and get some more experience, as if you hadn't enough growing up in the Nyhoff family. But you started working at Paul Schockmuller's in Germany, which I thought was very interesting. And I'm very curious to know what your experience has been like so far. And what are the things that have really stood out to you, like the main learnings so far?
What I really like to start with, to work with, like here when I'm at home working, of course, you're always, kind of the owner or son of the owner. And there you were just one of the... one of the guys,
yeah.
Normal. You just need to start. But you just need to do your work. Work with a big group together. You get your own responsibilities. They give you some projects to do, to work on, and you just need to deal with it and make sure you make it, get everything ready and done in time. And then it's just really amazing to work with, these kind of specialists who are working there and who are coming, who want to. Also, when they see that you are interested and you want to learn, they give you the opportunity to look with them actually to the horses. Or when they see something, they explain what they are looking at or what they are looking for. And that's something I really, really appreciated about the time there.
And I know the numbers that you were discussing that you own young horses at home is really, really high. But I think when you're talking about numbers there, it takes it to a whole different level.
Different level, yeah.
You're seeing so many offspring by so many of their stallions over and over again. You're getting to see a lot that maybe others don't see. Are there things from their system or how they select that you're thinking, that's interesting, that's something that I'd like to bring home?
What I really do actually, and what I like, is to, when a horse is doing some good jobs, they give them a chance to put them under the saddle, to give them time to develop the horse. And that's something that we also starting to do more and more here now. Because when it's, you need to know that you have a good horse, of course, but to give the horse a chance to believe in the horse and to make a plan for each horse
individually
actually. Yeah. And that's something that they do really well, in my opinion. They have a lot of horses, really. It's incredible amount. But every horse makes their own plan. They think about which rider they put them to, or is it better to put a horse in an auction to make some nice name for the horse, or is it better to keep the horse 1 year longer? Stuff like that, actually.
Okay.
It's very good structure.
Yeah. They have unbelievable system with everything from... When they start, in the season, they have really a lot of falls every day, every week. And it starts already with Paul Schockmuller himself and Christoph Rowold, who are checking the falls when they are between 1 and 2 weeks old. And they watch them all themselves. They have a look at it, what the mare is doing, if it's the surrogate mare or is it the real mother. Then they discuss what they do. They have a look at the mare. When there's an older mare, they discuss what we do. So they have a lot of horses, but they are really into the horses. They know every horse really well. They write everything down, also the small details. The horses are not just like numbers, actually. And that's really important to have.
Yeah, because I had heard about the records before, like even in the assessments of the loose jumping, that everything's written down at each time. Is there anything that they write down in terms of something that they look at, or a characteristic, or something that they think to record that you think, that's really interesting, or I haven't seen that before?
Yeah, they have a bit more they really like scopy horses, unbelievable scope, and they have really big horses in general. I think the horses are maybe 6-7 centimeters bigger in average than our horses when they are young already then. And we do more like to have a horse, with a bit more, maybe in the end, the last quality. Okay, then sometimes they can be a bit more complicated or difficult. And they really like to have a scopy horse, comfortable horse. When they are 4 or 5 years old, you can have a nice ride on them. When they have an auction or they have really good clients, everybody can sit on the horse, try the horse. When the Japanese riders, to just give an example, or the Hungarians, like the last couple of years, they wanted to buy like 10, 12 Grand Prix horses. And then they say, we have them. We have really scopy, easy horses. You can buy them next week. We go 3 weeks to the Sunshine Tour. They have some really good teachers who go with them. So their system is actually incredibly good. How they make the system work.
It's interesting to hear. I've only been there once, just a very quick look at the stallions. I've never really got to see the system properly, or to see the breeding program as such. Before I get on to my last question, I wanted to go back and just touch on the stallion show that I've mentioned before. As I said, I was there once with my father. It was a really positive experience. But this year's stallion show is taking place Saturday of next week, the 30th of March.
Yeah.
It's a really good event, both in terms of the education, but also as a chance for breeders to meet other breeders. It's a really positive event, and it's quite international at this stage. Could you talk me through what breeders can expect, or for anyone that's listening that decides they'd like to go for the first time? Can you talk a little about the event, what maybe the format, and what breeders can expect?
I think the format is also a little bit, it's more like a stallion presentation than a show. So we present the stallions in hand and under the saddle, also explain what the stallion stamp or what the mare needs to have. So we give good explanation on which mares they can use the stallion. They can see them jump. After the show, they can see them without the saddle. They can stand next to them and see how small or tall they are, or big or wide they are. So you have a much better impression and opinion about the stallion if you have seen it in the flesh, other than in a video or in a really nice brochure. And I think that is very valuable information for the breeders. So it's not just a show about spotlights, jumping out of the cake and making a lot of show, but it's also really a guidance to the breeders about the stallions, information and education for the breeders about what we think, what are the qualities of our stallions, and on which mares to use these stallions. Maybe Cameron, he's doing the presentation this year, like last year, so he can maybe explain a little bit also.
Yeah, I think what Jeanette is saying, it's totally true. We'd like to just say how it is, how the stallions are also at home, how they are in when you need to work with them, because the people don't know it. And you don't need to be negative about the stallion, of course not, but you can just give your honest opinion about what they need, what kind of mare they need, what can they do better, like with El Dorado or with Verdi, what are the best points, but also what we can improve with stallions like this. And we give an honest opinion. And after, we are also there for a few hours to have a drink together and to discuss. So when they ask, or when the horses are all standing together after the show, we are also there when they want to ask a question. We are there. The riders are there. We don't have any secrets, actually. It's just we try to do it, make it work together and not just getting a lot of mail numbers, and then we are not there anymore. We just try to make it work together.
Did you change venue last year?
Yeah, we did. We went from our own place to Lichtenvoorde.
This is actually a very nice place to move to. It's in our neighborhood. They have a lot of parking. It's a very nice indoor arena with a cafe in the middle, so people can have a coffee, something to eat. On the left side, they can see the warm-up, see how the stallions are trained and warmed up. And then the right side is the actual presentation of the stallions. So it's very nice to have a little bit more room, especially for the young stallions. In our place, it was getting very small because you have to put in the seats.
Yeah.
And you have a very small place to present the stallions. So last year, we had to choose this venue because of the very terrible weather. And because it was such a great success and such a good idea for the stallions and for the audience, we decided to keep it this way.
For me, from a selfish perspective, I struggle to attend a lot of the stallion shows in Europe because our sheep begin to give birth around now. So it's always difficult for us to get away. But just if anyone is considering going, I would highly recommend it because, yeah, we really enjoyed it the time that we were able to make it.
And for you and for all the viewers and watchers, it's always broadcasted live on Clip My Horse, and it stays in their library for free for like 14 days. So people who have missed it and want to look back or see a particular stallion and have not a Clip My Horse subscription, for 2 weeks, they can see it online. So even if they are abroad and have missed it, they can look back on the Clip My Horse site.
That's great. So my final question is the question that I end each interview with, and I'd like the answer from both of you, is what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone at the start of their breeding program? But I'm going to give a second part to Cameron, and that is, as a young person in the industry, what has been some of the best advice that you have been given? And it can be from family or it can be from outside the family, but some of the advice that has helped you the most so far in the industry.
I think from the family, it's that they say you just go, do what you think it's the best. Like with our own breeding program, they give me the chance to make the combinations with the stallions and with the mares. And when I see a really nice foal or a nice stallion, I can buy the horse, or I can buy the horse for the company, let's say. And then they say in the end, when it's good, it's good. And there will also be a few times when they say afterwards, maybe the next time, think about it a bit longer or discuss a bit more. Or but it's good to make a mistake. Then it reminds you of the last time what you did maybe wrong or could be do different, and then you learn from it the next time. I think that's the most important thing. And they also say when you really believe in something or you think you can manage it, can do it, then go for it. But when you do it, that's the important thing. Then we say in Holland, but I don't know the translation. We say bruisen, like really let's go. Then you also need to give 100%, 200% and go for it and make sure to get the best out of it.
Super.
And
Jeanette?
I think for the young breeders, it's very important because of the globalization. We have access to all semen in the world. So if you start, I think it's nice to start with a good mare line or a good filly because then you have a good start and you can buy almost semen everywhere from all countries. We have access now to everything around the globe. So I think the mare makes the difference, and you can try to find the best stallion to go with that. And also, performance gives performance. So look for good performance lines if you do something. And if you need support, please come and ask good people for help and experience, because that is a problem in our industry. We see a lot of older breeders that have no successors. So it's very important to help the young breeders to get them motivated, to give them the support to get started, because it's the number of young breeders in Holland is lesser and lesser, and the older breeders are disappearing. So it's a big gap to fill.
And that's why, for me, why I really enjoy doing this. It gives me a chance to record conversations with people that have been successful in the sport horse industry, and whether people are free to travel and meet these breeders or stallion owners or good people in the industry, even if people are not free, it can be accessed all over the world. So that's why I'm very grateful once again for the time that you've given to share your information and knowledge with other people. It's very much appreciated.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?